Hi, I'm Josh.
And I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Hideaway Circus Podcast, episode 90.
90.
That's French.
Happy, happy Wednesday, mid-October Wednesday. How far through the pandemic do you think we are at this point?
Oh my God. Well, we were having this discussion the other day. I feel like we're in like the end of the first third.
So like 30-ish percent of the way there.
Yeah. Because
wow,
I think
that's not so far.
No, I think we're in this for a long time. But I don't think we're in this like state for the entire time, if that makes sense.
Well, Broadway certainly agrees with you. They announced that no shows on sale at least until June 1st of 2021. So that pushed back the big fancy musical New York play Broadway community for another like 6 months, basically. And I think people could have seen this coming, but always just so depressing, like actually getting that news for real and it becoming official. That
I think we you and I were musing that it probably would be at least till September 2021. You know, June is a bit before that, but still it's depressing when it's like in writing and you see it in the news. You're like, no. I mean, it's so crazy to think that we haven't seen a live show since March 13th.
We did see a Zoom show, though.
We did see a Zoom show. It was a mentalist Zoom show.
Called Reconnected.
Yeah, it was actually really fun. I kind of went into it with no expectations. And our friend, Adam Siegel, is a producer of it. And we didn't get much information about it. It just was like, we want to do kind of almost like a rehearsal run with friends and family. And
it's
so
like mentalism. It's like mind reading.
Yeah, mentalism.
Magic. But not everything clearly will translate to Zoom shows. But oddly enough, I feel like mentalism does. Somebody reading your mind and saying, you were thinking of number 7, or you were thinking of zebras, and you were, and you have no idea how they guessed that, you know, across the internet, or like planted that thought in your head, or however that works. It was very effective. So those people looking for something to watch on the internet, check out Reconnected. But not everywhere is like New York. Really, everywhere in the world is quite different. Las Vegas is pushing ahead with reopening. And, you know, I guess it counts as an alma mater of some sort. But Spiegelworld, who, you know, are big friends of the podcast, Ross Mollison has been on a podcast probably more than anybody else. Ross runs Spiegelworld, are forging ahead with reopening absent at the end of this month.
Yeah. You know, one thing I didn't realize was a caveat of opening live shows is not only that you have to have, you know, 250 capacity or 50%, whichever is less, but you also have to be 25 feet from the performers, which is a whole other hurdle to get over. And like, of course you have to be far away, but I just didn't know it was 25 feet, and 25 feet in a tent, a Spiegel tent, is a long ways away.
It is. And, you know, if you like watching funny YouTube videos, Spiegelworld on Spiegelworld TV has been posting an episodic series of getting the show back
Shit
open.
Shit Show Vegas or something. Like, I forget.
Hit Show Vegas. Oh. Shit Show Vegas. Hit Show Vegas.
I misread that.
Hopefully it won't turn into a shit show. But it's actually quite interesting. I think Spiegelworld and Absinthe through that team. And then our other friend, Piff the Magic Dragon, who's a hilarious magician who does an act in a dragon costume, is also reopening at the end of this month. So it really
Flamingo.
Seems...
But he's moving to a bigger room. So we saw him in a smaller room. Now he's in the bigger room that holds, I think, like 700 or 750. So then they can have a, you know, smaller capacity because the room he was in before is like 200 people. Mm. But the show that he's moving to was where RuPaul's like show was, which nice. I guess is closed. I don't know.
RuPaul, your favorite drag queen?
He's not my favorite. She's not my favorite drag queen, but I do love the show and most of what she preaches.
I feel like Piff, in a way, is like a bit more of an obvious thing to come back because he can do his show just himself and his chihuahua on stage.
Yes.
Piffles is the name of the chihuahua.
And he has like an assistant or two.
He has an assistant too, but he could do the show with no assistant. Yes. So in one way, you can get away with the sort of one man show, like casts not giving coronavirus to one another kind of thing. I think Absinthe sounds like they're going to be doing a lot of testing. But I think the bigger question for Absinthe is, will the audience return? And I think the answer is probably, because there's enough people who want to see shows and there's not going to be a lot of competition. And Absinthe's a high quality show. But you know, there's no guarantee of anything in this world.
No, I mean, honestly, I'm the most excited to see if audiences actually go. I hope they do, because that's a positive outlook for other shows. I think I'll be more concerned if no one's going.
Well, in Germany, they had been starting to reopen Tiger Palace and a lot of the other GOP variety houses, prepping for having shows this fall. Some shows moved from like smaller venues into ballrooms, not unlike PIFF, to get the kind of capacity they needed. And now that Germany and France are having these second waves, all of those projects have been shut down or pushed again. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if in the States,
right,
we have something like a second wave, or if we treat it differently or not differently. I feel for those in Europe who plan these new seasons on the assumption of, okay, we'll be back by here. And now all that work, all that money is essentially out of the window.
I know. It's kind of like, you don't want to open too early and then it just to close. But you also don't want to just wait to open and then never open. I don't know. It's a very interesting line to ride, but there's a theater in New York called the Daryl Roth Theater that's kind of a weird theater.
Like, Forza Bruta was there for circusy people. Yeah,
which to me is the only show that has actually worked in that space. Every other show that's gone in has closed early. It's a really weird space, and it's good for circus, and they should just be programming more spectacle stuff, but oh well. But they're doing a show that's not a play, it's not a musical. It's a sound light experience called Blindness. I don't really get what it's going to be, but I think it's, you know, it's imported from London. And you go in small groups, you sit in chairs spread out in the space, and you listen to with headphones to a narration while the lights around you are changing.
I did read in that article how they had to sort of change the status of the theater from being a theater to a museum or gallery, because in New York State, museums and galleries are allowed to reopen while theaters are not. There's a lot of like nonsense state regulation I've been reading, people like trying to get around. Disneyland in California just wrote a whole letter to the California state government saying, your regulations you want us to enact aren't actually even all that safe or possible to do. So it's interesting seeing how the Daryl Roth team is trying to navigate how do we use our space in these times. I am kind of interested by that. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of that project that Guy Liberté was working on with his triangular tent with lights and sound and DJ music.
What was that called?
Maybe it's a little less theatrical. I think it was called like PS1 or something, or Psy something.
I don't know.
We talked about it a while ago. Yeah, but
so long
ago. I hope people go to see this Daryl Roth experience at that theater. It'll be a good sign for the arts in New York if that sells well.
Yeah.
But it's not the most compelling plot, you know, just to go see a show, to be totally honest. Go sit in a dark room with, look at some lights change and a podcast on your headphones.
Interestingly, also, I've, you know, just talking to more people with babies and kids, it's like the concern has been raised of like, okay, a vaccine is coming out, but for adults. So are they going to feel safe to be with their kids out until there's a vaccine for babies and kids? So I don't know. I mean, I really think that I'm excited to see if people go to see Absinthe. I'm excited to see if people go see this, whatever it's called, Blindness. I hope so, you know, I really hope so. But I also found that there's a drive-in circus, not Savage City, but in California.
Like a drive-in where you park your car, you sit, what kind of traditional contemporary circus?
So, you know, it's called the
Zope Family Circus.
Yes.
Yes, the Zopes are like legit. They were the ones who did the horse act in that old Smirkus video. So
how
traditional.
I just don't know how to pronounce it.
Zope. Zope. Z-O-P-P.
Yes, with a little accent aigu. Yeah, so they did a drive-in circus show in California, and tickets were between $84 and $175 per car. So I guess, you know, if you pretty can expensive stuff people in the car, but it looks like it was like in a drive-in
clown car style.
Yeah, looks like it was in a parking lot, and they had a massive structure that's like kind of a square. You can see it. Well, Josh can see it.
Yeah,
it's
kind of like a concert trussing structure.
Yeah, and they have you know, three aerial rigs off of it. And it's elevated, and the cars are kind of all around a semicircle. So basically, most of the show was aerial acts, so you could see it. It was in Redwood City.
The outdoor circus is a very interesting nut to crack this year. We will certainly be working on cracking it our own way. like we said before, the issues with drive-in is like, is it that comfortable to sit in your car and watch a circus show the way it was at least to watch movies back in the 50s, 60s, 70s at drive-in heydays.
Well, they also have so many blind spots in your car and then you're behind someone else. So obviously aerial locks work
well. What was the name of that show at Dahl Roth again?
Blindness.
So maybe that'd be like perfect for a drive-in.
Actually, kind of experience. You just put the...
You drive your car into a dark room, you turn on the audio in your car. It doesn't know the way about the blind spots in it.
Right? I know, it doesn't work. And you have to see over any other cars.
I think as much as we're like, oh, you know what's going to happen to circus, at least we can experiment. I think all of our circus people listening are like, hey, at least we're trying it, right? We're trying to figure out what to do. Can we do a Zope family show, the drive-in?
They had a human cannonball too.
Nice. Can we do absinthe, you know, with limited cabaret seating? Can we do this? Can we do that? You know who can't really do anything?
Who?
People who work in traditional theater.
I know.
And the number one reason, unsurprisingly, is unions.
Yes. Unions are a wonderful thing and a horrendous thing at the same time. It blocks a lot of growth and innovation. But it also, when things are running well, it also helps
protects against abuse.
Stability, right.
Yeah.
And gives you kind of, you know, guidelines, which are helpful. And then in today's day and age where there's no work, they're even more detrimental. And there's a huge fight with SAG and AEA. And SAG is, you know, film, television, radio, SAG-AFTRA.
Stands for the Screen Actors Guild.
Which I actually am a part of. I am a voting member of SAG-AFTRA.
But just to slow you down for one moment. So sure. Actors in America are in two unions. You're either in the union for live things, which is Actors Equity, and or like you said, if you're in movies or television, you're in SAG. So Screen Actors Guild. Or radio. Anything that's like a recorded, essentially, or a live broadcast medium. And now everybody is doing their online theater shows. And these people were previously, when you were working at a theater, doing it live under an equity contract. But now that it's going out on the internet, SAG is like, excuse me, it's broadcasted live. Like, we have jurisdiction over this. And now these two unions are going to court to fight over who gets to broadcast live theater. And the craziest part about it to me is if you're in a union, you pay dues into this union. They're still asking for money, even though nobody is making any work. Mm-hmm. They are still increasing the price of people's health insurance and how much they have to work per year in order to get that health insurance. What do your dues go to? It goes to you fighting other actors over who should get the right jurisdiction. Just the biggest waste of money for these out-of-work actors, in my opinion. And an example of like, why are they focused on that? Focus on figuring out how to reopen and how to get your members work, not on fighting with your sister union over who gets to represent the Zoom recording on the internet.
Well, also what's just so crazy to me is if you're an equity member and you're a part of the union and you're getting work through SAG because your show is being broadcast, wouldn't the union be like, great, you're getting work? And they're only fighting because they're not getting the percentage
they want
of money, which is absolutely insane. I don't know. Equity just seems prohibitive in so many ways.
That's interesting. If you're in an equity, if you're an equity actor and you're in Las Vegas, you can't reopen your show.
No.
Spiegelworld can. Piff can, because they can do their own thing. Spiegelworld's hired circus performers, non-union. Piff's a non-union magician. When they feel like it's safe for them to return, whether it's the performer or the producer or the team or the company as a whole, they put their own mitigation measures in place. People can go back to work, theoretically.
Right.
Ain't nobody going back to work until all these unions stop fighting amongst themselves.
Right.
Which well, that's is just sad and depressing, really.
Right. That's the other problem with like a tour, right? The theater touring circuit is also really hurting because even if the rules in Chicago, let's say, are like different and you can reopen in Chicago, equity might not let you do it. Plus, like, you have to quarantine and all this stuff. And it's a lot nicer when you're not in a union right now and you can just have your own kind of, you know, self-awareness and be like, okay, we're going to reopen. It's another positive about circus, like you said.
When you said, like, you had to quarantine, you made me think of Lorenzo Pisoni or Kevin Beverly, two past podcast guests who have each had to quarantine for 14 days in a tiny little hotel room in Australia when they entered from the US. But then once you do your 14-day quarantine, you're basically free in Australia to go have a good time, it seems like.
Maybe we should move to Australia.
No, thank you. On that note, I would maybe consider moving to Cape Town, which is where our guests are from today, Laurence and Brent, who are a married couple and also the founders of Zip Zap Circus, which is an amazing social circus based in Cape Town, South Africa. Honestly, I think this was maybe the most inspiring podcast up there, a top five most inspiring podcasts of people who start circus companies that really have made an overwhelmingly positive impact on the world and are doing something truly, truly unique and special that deserves a light to be constantly pointed at them as this is what we should be striving for, or yes, this is the kind of organization we need more of here in the States or here in North America. And I don't know, I just felt if we ended that conversation, I was like buzzing for a week afterwards.
Yeah, they're amazing. And I knew a lot about Zip Zap Circus. I didn't know nearly as much as I do now after talking with them. It's funny, the conversation in America is a lot like, how do we diversify these circus camps and these circus schools? And how do we allow people in, but how do we cultivate people feeling a part of the circus and getting it into them as kids and not just, you know, wealthy, predominantly white neighborhoods, blah, blah, blah. Why are we all like trying to figure it out when Zip Zap has actually done it? You know, I'm like, let's talk to them and really learn from them, because I learned so much from just listening to them and not trying to figure it out on our own. You know, it's interesting. And they were in South Africa in apartheid, in a moment that, you know, felt probably like it feels now, where it's like impossible. And they did it, and they're incredible. And it's a really fun interview. Before you listen to our podcast, or after you listen to our podcast and, you know, you're thinking about how much you love our podcast, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, Twitter tweet us, or email us at hello@hideawaycircus.com.
Enjoy the interview with Laurence and Brent. Well, Laurence and Brent, thank you guys so much for talking with us today. I'm so excited to speak to you both. Where are we reaching you?
We are now at home, at our home in Cape Town, South Africa, in a little fishing village called Hout Bay, which means Wooden Bay.
I've actually been to Cape Town, and it's one of my favorite places I've been able to travel to ever. It's so beautiful.
Yep, we're very lucky to live here.
Yeah.
Well, to be born here.
And so Brent, you grew up in South Africa?
Yeah, yeah. My mother, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, my great-grandmother, and their parents.
Wow.
So I think I'm fifth generation Cape Townian.
And were they circus performers or arts people as well, or were you the first generation? No,
absolutely not. Sorry. Not at all. And I'm the first one in the family to run away and join the circus.
What kind of was the impetus for you starting to understand that you liked the arts?
Well, I grew up in a pretty rough neighborhood in Cape Town back in the 60s. And, you know, there was a YMCA that had a flying trapeze rig in the back. And we kind of, as youngsters, would always jump over and try to climb up on the gear and get kicked out. And then I guess the older guys got really tired of kicking the youngsters out. So they started teaching us flying trapeze. And, the thing on the trapeze, I was like, I'm hooked. This is cool. And eventually, you know, a few years later, that flying trapeze YMCA developed into the first circus school in South Africa. It was called Circus Ozla. So we went from six kids to hopping the fence to 70, 80 kids, you know, in a fully fledged circus school. And then, you know, by the time I turned 14, I told my mother, the first chance I get, I'm going to become a professional trapeze artist. And 2 years later, I left the country.
Wow.
Were there any like circuses in particular touring around South Africa that you could see?
Absolutely.
As a kid that were inspiration?
I remember my mother took me to see Boswell Wilkie Circus. I remember the spot in Cape Town exactly. And I distinctly remember watching these guys fly through the air. And I was like, completely mesmerized by the trapeze artist. I was only about 5 years old. I had no idea I was one day going to get the opportunity to do that, but I really fell in love with the flying trapeze. And I was scared of the clowns, but That was South Africa's only traveling circus in those days.
It was British.
No, which actually originated in England and came over here. But it became like the South African National Touring Circus because it was here so many years.
Oh, that's funny.
And Lawrence, you're not from South Africa originally, right? So where in France did you grow up? And were you exposed to circus as a kid or something else?
Yeah, we had a little sad show coming to our town with the sad animals and the sad clown. And it was a pretty sad experience to have that show coming every year. And only once I met Brent in the Caribbean, and I came back after my 6 months work in the hotel. So I came back to Paris, and then I saw a show at the Cirque d'Hiver that was advertised, and it looked like they didn't have animals or anything. And I went to see Le Cirque Réinventé, the first Cirque du Soleil show. And I thought, oh, okay, that's a cool circus. That's really, yeah.
What it's supposed to be.
What it's, yeah. So.
I was reading on the ZipZap website about your bios, but you also have sort of like a gymnastics, athletic background.
Yeah. So I did,
right?
I did ballet, and then I did gym, and then I did sports university to become a sports teacher. So I had, I was windsurfing, snow skiing, hurdle, gym. So quite athletic, acrobatic stuff, but no circus. But I guess when I met Brent, I found that the sport and the art were quite nicely mixed in the circus. I really, really liked that.
How old were you guys when you met? I want to hear the story of the Caribbean meeting.
Well, we were 28 years old, both of us. I had a pretty bad accident in San Diego, California. And I was trying to recover. I'd run out of money. I had 1 month rent in my apartment in San Diego. I was like really trying to heal myself with a back injury. And a friend of mine called up and said, listen, they're looking for somebody who knows about circus in this place called Club Med in the Caribbean. And you only have to do one trapeze show a week and teach some kids or something. And I had never heard of Club Med or flying trapeze in Club Med. And I was like, well, okay, well, one trapeze show a week, and this sounds like a good fine. And then I hopped on a plane, and next thing I was, teaching guys to, I got into putting teams together for Club Med to bring more trapeze riggings into the system. And I was the only one with any circus experience in the, most of the instructors were like water ski instructors and tennis instructors. It was led by a guy called Bob Christians, who I think we learned trapeze in the Florida State University, had a whole trapeze rig set up there, and very nice guy. We got on really well. And anyway, I was only going to stay six months. And then I met Laurence, who was actually my boss because she was the hotel manager. And I taught her flying trapeze, and she took to it like a duck to water. It was amazing. And then we became partners, and we spent a couple of years in Club Med, and then we left and went to go work on a circus in her hometown in Paris with Circus Grus, a traditional, what's my background, traditional circus, and I guess we stayed together ever since.
When I met Lindsay, so my background was circus and Lindsay's was theater. Right when we met, I was like, I got to take you to a flying trapeze class so you at least get like what this feeling of, circus in general is.
I was so bad at it. I was so
bad.
First
to last one.
Was not graceful in the air, I would say.
Yes, we got a nice iced coffee afterwards so she could hold her,
my hands hurt so much.
In Brooklyn at a place called Circus Warehouse.
Did you meet?
In Queens,
okay.
Right?
Did you?
Ace, that's one of the people who I know from the ZipZap world. But I know him from Streb, which is a different training space. Yeah. And I met him maybe in 2009 too. Yeah. So before he went to Las Vegas.
I should try.
And, like, when he was training straps for the first time and before his like serial act, which he has now. Yes, same kind of facilities. But so I'm guessing you had a different reaction, Laurent Sim was like, this is wonderful and I can get into this, as opposed to Lindsay's like, I'm not doing that again.
Are you talking about the trapeze?
Yeah.
No, sorry.
Yeah, the trapeze.
No, yeah. Not his her reaction to you.
No.
It's unstable. Oh,
yeah, it's all right. Here, I can ask that again if that makes it a little easier. But I was just saying, so after that first flying trapeze class, you just had that inclination that circus was a direction to head in.
For me?
Yeah, for you.
Yeah.
No. It was just a hobby, and then the trapeze artist was quite cute. So that was it.
I understand that feeling.
And what did you guys do after you met at... Oh, this delay is rough.
She had no inclination of it. The internet's a bit rough. Sorry
it's
about
ours
that.
Too.
Yeah, in Africa.
And I don't think Laurence had any intention of leaving her high-powered job to become a flying trapeze artist. But we were having lots of fun.
So what were you doing in San Diego then that made you have a back injury? Was it flying trapeze?
No, I actually left the flying trapeze stupidly and decided to get into the high wire business. And our flying trapeze act actually broke up in California. We went to work on Circus Vargas in the early 80s. And then our act split up. And then I went solo and decided to do high wire. And I should have stuck to the trapeze. So I was working in SeaWorld doing a high wire act in the City Street show. And there was a bit of a rigging issue and I fell and I injured my back pretty badly. But the good part is that accident led me to Club Med and led me to Laurence. So without accident, I wouldn't be sitting here now and there would be no Zip Zap.
That's true.
So, it was all meant to be. It was the fall I ever had.
So tell us how Zip Zap came to be. What brought you guys back to South Africa after clearly touring the world or, you know, being abroad?
You want to go first?
Well, we met in 89 and traveled with Club Med, and then we were performing Brent was putting shows together with the kids. So at the end of the week, he would put a circus show together with all the children and a flying trapeze show with adults. And after a few years, we said, well, it would be really cool to experience the real circus. So contacted an old friend who became agent, and he found us a contract on Cirque Grus, Arles Grus. Came back to do the season, and then once you finish the Christmas tree and all that season that's very, very busy, then the traditional circus go back to rest for a few months. So mid-January, they rest, and then they start again the season in Easter. So it's perfect timing to go to South Africa. It's winter in Europe. It's summer in South Africa, and he wanted to show me Cape Town. So we came here for just a couple of months.
Six weeks holiday. And we stayed 28 years. It must be a nice place.
It is such a nice place. Although I need to go back now that I have an inclination for circus and see kind of more, you know, of that side of South Africa rather than just vacation. But so at what point then, Laurent, did you say, like, I'm going to learn this act and abandon my sports and my job and kind of just like go into the circus?
Italy.
Well, already, yeah, we were in Italy and we had an idea to do like a super show for Club Med and to sell the TV rights. So Club Med, the guests come for 1 or 2 weeks and they come as a group. And we thought every week Brent has got like one superstar child, really talented kid. And we thought, well, instead of doing shows every week with different kids, why not do a super show at the end of the season the resort is quite empty. They could bring back all those special families with the kids, do a super show, sell the TV rights, you know, make money and be a bit more creative, a bit more interesting for brand instead of repeating the same and same thing over and over every week. Put a big presentation together, went to all the offices in Paris, and then nobody can make a decision, and it's not the idea, and there's big ego there to go over. And I think, you know, by you're almost 30 and you're like, okay, well, now it's time we do our own idea. If we've got some ideas, let's do it on our own. Let's not, you know.
It was becoming a bit like living in a box. You know, nobody wanted to open the lid.
And we thought, let's do different things and let's do, you know. And that's it. So in Italy, you said, well, let's do live the circus life and rented, find a caravan, lived in a caravan in the freezing cold in Paris next to the lions and tigers cages because it was traditional circus and see. So I took a year gap. I had a secure job. So it was for me easy to just take a step and go for the circus area because it was a year gap for me. Was it?
Little did she know.
A year gap.
It was
a live calling.
When we arrived here, it was a holiday for 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, we didn't have any money. So we looked at each other and said, well, let's do what we were doing in Clement, but let's do it for ourselves. So find a trapeze rig, put it at the waterfront. Didn't exist at the time, but we heard that they were built. And then people would pay R5. So it's like 25 cents to swing. And then we had the tourists coming to pay. And then around the trapeze, we had little kids that couldn't afford it. And they were kids of color. And they were just hanging around. And then at the end of the day, when we had no more tourists, we said to the kids, come up for free. And then come back tomorrow. And then we give you another swing. But then you help us put the net up or the net down. Or help us carry the poles. And, you know, things like that. And we thought, you know, it's 92 and Mandela is out of jail, but there's no elections yet. They're talking about the elections and a lot of people are packing. They're packing, they're leaving, they're going to Canada, to Australia, to
London,
Atlanta.
London.
I mean,
there was talk of war. There was all this fear of a civil war.
But we were dealing with happy kids of all shapes and colors and we thought, you know, in the circus world, well, that's what I learned at Cirque Bruce, is every night you have dinner with a different caravan, with the Romanians that are good at a handstand, the Italians on the wire, and each people from different country.
And different backgrounds and
different
cultures.
Different backgrounds, they bring something interesting to the show, and that's what is great. And I say, well,
diversity.
Exactly. So let's do that with the problem that we have now in South Africa.
Let's mix kids together.
And let's use them because they are the future. Let's do that. So that's what we have.
We started with a very ideological idea. No equipment, no money, no costumes, no venue. Good idea. And we went to a street kids. And we asked who wants to come and hang out with us and went to the work in the townships. And my old school had three different group of kids, middle-class, wealthy white kids. We had kids from the townships, which is like townships outside of the cities where it's living. Yeah. And then the street kids who are sort of either living on the street or live in a shelter that looks after street children. So we just immediately mixed the three race groups, so brown, black, and white kids, and sort of got a venue at an old deserted warehouse.
At the waterfront.
Yeah, but then basically we really started in this deserted warehouse on the railroad tracks, which the train company let us use for free because it was an abandoned laundry building that they used to wash their blankets from the trains. And that's where kind of Zips have sort of taken off. And we did that for a couple of years in this holes in the roof. It was like crazy. But I was really, it was crazy, but it was working. And then 2 years later, we got offered well, asked to go 800 kilometers from Cape Town with his band of kids and put on a show. So I kind of dug out, and we, with the kids and Laurence, we dug out an old circus tent out of a friend of mine's garden that was laying there for years. We washed it, managed to get a truck to transport it, and we went to the biggest arts festival in Grahamstown in 1994, which was the year of the first elections of South Africa, free elections. And we put on this show and in a tent, and the kids did everything, the seating, the light. It was like a really sort of a microcosmos of what could be the new South Africa.
So it was in July. The elections were in April. And we were the first multiracial group. They had
the festival.
Singers or dancers, but all from the same race or the same neighborhood. And we were the only multiracial group.
Fully multiracial.
So we got a bit of publicity and then got invited, did a couple of TV shows. And then people started calling us to say, well, can you come perform at our school? And can you come perform at our event? And can you come perform at our expo?
And one year later, we went back to that same festival. And from the festival, we hopped onto a bus and we drove to Johannesburg and we performed for then President Nelson Mandela for his birthday.
Amazing.
And then we got to meet him. We got to speak with him. He hugged all the kids. He was great. And it was like a really an amazing moment. It was that sort of moment where everything starts making sense. You running this crazy organization for 4 years and, you know, on instinct, I guess. And then when Nelson Mandela tells you, keep up the good work, and all of a sudden it becomes puts a whole different spin on what you thought you were setting out to do.
Yeah, because...
I think the beginning of the real Zipzap, I guess, started in 1995.
Because apartheid in South Africa ended in 94 or 90. Yeah, yeah. 94.
Well, no, it's actually 90.
It didn't end officially.
Yeah, so Mandela was released from prison and then he had negotiations. So he started negotiating with de Klerk and de Klerk wanted him to compromise. And then Mandela said, I'm not compromising.
It was very unstable. It was very shaky. Yeah. There was war between factions.
But the elections were fantastic. Yeah, April 94, it was just they gave a day off, public holiday, and they actually had to give the second day of public holiday because lines were throughout all the streets, but everybody, and it was cold and everybody was sharing of coffees and stuff. It was great.
It was an amazing day. It was amazing. I mean, basically Nelson Mandela single-handedly prevented a proper civil war in South Africa and you know, set the what was then called the Rainbow Nation on its course, you know.
Everybody was on the hype, you know. Everybody was happy and keen and everything. And then after that, you try face all the challenges, you know, the infrastructure challenge and the access challenge and the things that historically have been broken for years, and it's just so difficult to fix. So difficult.
We started really realizing very quickly that our mission with ZipZap was a simple one. It was to bridge gaps between kids. Finished. How we were going to do it, and where we were going to do it, and with how many kids, we had no idea what we were getting into. But we were on this mission to break down barriers and bring kids from all backgrounds and cultures together, teach them to live and work like a circus family, and everything was going to be cool. That was it.
Where did the name ZipZap come from?
Well, up until 94, we called our project Dare to Dream. Because we told the kids, if you dare to dream, it'll come true. So it was Dare to Dream. But when we went on our first adventure with a tent, we sat the kids around and said, listen, we need to come up with a name for this show, for this tour. And anyway, we went from the Power Rangers circus to that circus. And then Zippies. And I said, no, Zippies is in England. And then Zappy. And then ZipZap bounced out. And we said, okay, well, we'll call it the ZipZap Circus Adventure for this tour. And when we come back, we'll find the proper name for our organization. and it never changed. It was Zip Zap from then.
That's kind of like the...
Also, this, it's a word that you...
What did you say? Sorry.
And I just said it's two words you can say in most languages. Mm. Zip Zap. No special meaning. It's just easy to say.
That's... Well, do you guys know Circus Smirkus?
Yeah, yeah, very much. Yeah, we're in contact with them quite a lot. Yeah.
Awesome. So I'm on their board. I think maybe you also know Beth Binns, who's on their board. I think she said she knew you guys.
Absolutely.
But that's that. The name of Smirkus was founded by just the guy's mom going, "Eh, Circus Smirkus." Like, that's what kind of idea is that? So it's another one of those, you know, kind of silly phrases that has like stuck. But I mean, Zip Zap has grown like so much over time, and there's so many people you've exported to the rest of the world. I'm wondering, I mean, clearly there was a lot of energy just from the beginning, you know, of growth and how it was sort of fitting into the culture at the time. But can you talk a little bit about what it's like going from basically you two to having like a large arts organization with a board and, you know, all these different things as you scale up?
I guess you must just trust the process. So the people that surrounded us had the same vision and the same belief. And some were more qualified than us in legality or marketing, and we would trust them completely. So the lady who took us to the Grahamstown Festival, she used to head the marketing department of the waterfront, which is a very big tourist area in Cape Town. So she found the bus and she found the place for us to stay and she found food sponsorship and, okay, you know, so, and then the guy, one of the dads, he said, well, you need to set up a structure. I said, well, what's the legal structure? Okay. Set up a trust there and then do the application to become a nonprofit organization. But I mean, it's over years. So from 92, when we started Zip Zap, we set up the trust in 98. And then we set up the NPO in 2005, and then a PBO in 2008. So it takes a long time. And every time we learn from others and say, oh, how come you're getting a grant? What did you do to get a grant? I said, well, you need to be registered as a nonprofit organization. What's that? So slowly we get to do that because we're quite remote. I mean, well, in South Africa in 92, we were remote. Rules, the country was very different. Everything would close on a Friday afternoon. It was very religious. You didn't have any imported goods that didn't exist. You had three TV channels, TV1, TV2.
Yeah, but the thing is,
you had not much contact. You didn't have.
The thing is, we were, you know, it was in a very organic process because we were teaching the kids, performing with the kids, making the costumes, washing the costumes, driving the tours, making a living on our side, doing our own shows, flying trapeze shows at the festival, at fairs and stuff, so we could make a living. We started doing stunts in the movies so we could buy a house and you know, like, and keep Zip Zap going with our own cash. And so there was like a lot going on. So creating the business model was not part of our understanding or plan. We were just doing what needed to be done to keep this little band of circus warriors going. And that's what we did. And it just grew.
In 94, I got a job in the Sun City. It's like the Las Vegas of South Africa. It's a casino with four hotels. And then they have extravaganza. And then in between the little scenes, then you have three speciality acts. So one of the acts, so I could make a living, and then that could pay for Brent to be able to carry on with the school. So a year and a half, we were split, and I was in Johannesburg making money, and he was running the school. So he could create, he could do anything he wanted without having to worry how to pay the rent.
And she was doing a very good cradle act with another girl who was married to a friend of mine that I did flying trapeze with, a French-Belgian girl, and the two of them created the act, and our wives went to make money while we were trying to build up our organizations. So it was quite an interesting time.
I mean, I'm very curious. We've talked to a few people who are circus couples, married people who work together. And I'm wondering if you, I'll frame it as advice, but I'm wondering if you have any like life lessons or things you've learned, you know, working together, being married and being in the circus, if you know, is anything you would say to a younger version of yourselves or, you know, people doing a similar thing?
I think aside from all the ups and downs and challenge anybody to work 24/7 together and live together, it's quite a challenge. But if you share the same passion and you have the same dreams and aspirations and you really believe in what you're doing, and you also know that, you know, we are part of changing children's lives and maybe giving opportunities they might not have. And then when you see these young people who come from very difficult backgrounds make it and when you're part of that, it's bigger than the both of this, you know, the both of you. So it kind of, I'm not saying we never had ups and downs, you know, and disagreements and stuff, of course, but it just makes sense to be together, because as a team we could get all this done, and we still today, 28 years later, we're still getting things done. It's gone from 15 kids to 2,000 kids and 10 programs, you know, so and 25 staff members, and all the teachers are kids who grew up there, and, you know, they drive trucks and buses and they pick up their kids from their neighborhoods and bring them to Zip Zap. And it's kind of this little crazy little machine that's become this slightly bigger, but it's ever as crazy. And it's...
But my advice is to young couples starting is patience and also focus on the strength, on each other's strength. So hopefully you have different one, and
yeah,
it's just to focus on your strengths instead of pointing out the weaknesses. And then you find the missing pieces, your weaknesses, you find other people to complete that. And yeah, that's what I would say for somebody to have to work and play together.
It's a lot. Yeah. Especially during COVID where you're really stuck together.
Yeah, for sure. That'll test anybody.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking about, you know, like in America, we're kind of having this, I guess, reawakening of race conversations, even though they never really went away. But because of COVID and all this stuff, it really became a very big topic of conversation again, especially in New York, where, and we had protests every day by our apartment, which is amazing. But we've talked about, like, how do we help the circus? What do we do that is going to be a good change, and how can we help? And Zip Zap seems like way before, you know, this moment in America, you kind of were thinking about it in a way. And the challenges that we always like come up with are, well, how do you bring kids to the circus when they don't live there? Do you know what I mean? Like if it's in a wealthier neighborhood.
No, it was a conscious decision. Yeah. So we set up Zip Zap in the middle of Cape Town, and the township is 50 kilometers away. They don't have access. They don't have money for transport. They can't afford cars. Train is dangerous. So we started saying, okay, we need to help those kids to come.
Yeah.
So we give them 10 rand each so they can go home and come back. And the next day we'll give them, you know, 10 rand each time. And then started growing, starting costing us a lot of money. When you have 10 kids, it's fine. But then 100 kids is starting to get complicated. And then that's when we say, okay, well, let's get a bus and let's get a driver and let's bring those kids. But you have to make a conscious decision. And then we say, well, we don't have any circus teachers. Well, I said, well, let's train them. So let's make a course, and then that's where I'm telling you about patience. You have to teach them for years and years, and then some are not going to be interested to follow the path and stay with the circus industry. And the one who are, you carry on teaching them until the circle is finished, and then they stop teaching the younger one. That's why it's a lot of patience. I was not going to come, especially me being French, coming in the country, and this is my way and no way. And I said, well, I'm just a guide, a facilitator. I find that circus is an amazing teacher for your own life, how to conduct your life and how to be kind and compassionate and tolerant and open-minded and all that. Let's use that to teach life to a lot of kids who don't have families, who don't know where to go. The academic system is not really great in South Africa. If you can afford a private school, it's great, but government schools, they're overcrowded.
They fall through the cracks. They're
following a system that was made during apartheid years. I mean, it's completely ridiculous. We decided to put a system in place to empower those kids, to give them opportunities, but it just takes a long time.
Our sort of teacher trainer course, performers, technicians, and teachers come through a 4-year course at ZipZap, which is not recognized by the Department of Education. It's our own course. But basically, not every kid in that comes through the doors is going to be a performer, you know. So they have the options to become technicians, and we teach them rigging and lighting, and they run the sound, they plot the lights for the shows, they put the lights up, they climb the beams, you know. And we've got a big tent where we do most of our performances. And then, you know, we really need teachers because there are more and more kids coming. So we were really short of teachers. So we started pushing the whole teaching thing, you know, and learning to teach and now it's amazing because the kids that have grown up there that are running all the programs, they drive the buses. It's incredible to watch. I mean, we were just watching our Dare to Dream, which is our young adult training program, which is like alternative to academics. If you're not academically inclined, you know, ZipZap provides a way to succeed in life using alternative education. And I was watching the Dare to Dream doing their acts today and their presentations to the teachers, and then the teachers give feedback to them, and, you know, for the next presentation next Friday. And I stood up there at the top watching down at that. I was like so proud of these kids who I saw grow up, and, you know, some of them, I used to do acts with some of those kids, and, you know, throwing them or holding them on the tribute. And to see them so, like, wow, so efficient and so passionate and so caring about the kids that they're teaching. And it's unbelievable that full circle is brilliant to.
It's confusing because you say kids for kids and kids. So yeah, the kids are the teachers.
I still call them kids, but they're actually young adults. Sorry.
And they are the instructors.
Yeah, they are the instructors. Are all over kids. 20 years old now. No way. But like they grew up with us. So I'm sorry. I meant our young adults who are now teachers are teaching the kids.
Amazing.
So they left. They were with us in 92, 93, then they left 2001. 2001 was the first professional troupe to leave. 2003, the second professional troupe. They did their lives, and now they're starting to come back.
Yeah.
Now they, you know, late 30s, 40s, now kids, and they want, you know, they still would like to be involved in the circus industry, and they like the social circus aspect, and then we offer job, like secure jobs. So we back with the kids that started with us when they're 10 years old, and then they're 40 years old, and they're part of the team. It's cool.
In 2020, how has coronavirus impacted ZipZap? Have you guys been going on as normal? Have you guys had to really change it up?
No, listen.
Hectic. It's complicated in South Africa.
Yeah.
Very complicated. We had 30% unemployment before the virus hit, and now with the hospitality industry closed, the airport, all that entertainment industry closed, we up to 50% unemployment. So it's like really hectic.
It's economically been crippling.
It's complete lockdown. So in March, we make almost 50% of our income. 45% of our income comes from shows. So we have a tent, a venue, and we host events for bank and insurance and everything. So that brings 50% of the income. The other 50% is grants and donation. So in February, I started having cancellations, postponement of the events booked for the year.
Boom. Like, 45% gone.
Okay. Now the president speak, because we were thinking, we're in Africa, we're far away from all the, you know, the Western problems. And then it hits South Africa, especially Cape Town. We'd be the first hit because it's so touristy. We had people from all over the world here. So closed, suspended all our programs, everybody in lockdown. So performers, instructors, no programs, no activities, nothing. Everybody locked down for 2 months. They didn't move, but I mean, my admin team, we were looking for money like crazy, and we were so worried about our kids in the township not going to school, not having money, because their parents usually they get paid like every week. And they can they had no work, no job, no.
But we were very quick on to jump onto the. We organized data. We supplied the kids in the township. We had cell phones data, and we did online classes like very quickly to keep them motivated and to keep their head from not hanging out on the streets. You know, and so we really tried, well, not Laurence and her
just
team.
Just calling them, yeah. First, we started to say, okay, we're going to call all our kids. All our kids, we're going to give them a call to let them know that we're here, we're thinking of us. And we say, okay, well, we're going to call and say what? So we started preparing a questionnaire, like a check-in health, a mental health questionnaire. So each instructor, we give them the questionnaire. We give them a list of kids to call. Even our instructors didn't have any data. So we have fundraising campaign on crowdfunding, fund money to give the instructors data so they could call, fill up the questionnaires, give us the return. We analyze the answers and say, okay, what do they need? Okay, first they need data, then they need food, and then they started feeling anxiety, isolation. So then we started WhatsApp group. We started Zoom calls. We started virtual circles.
Food parcels.
Food parcels, and we would come in T-shirts and just remind them that we were there, not far away from them. It was hectic. We worked so hard. Maybe 24/7 for the first 3 months. Non-stop. It was hectic to keep to.
And we had to have special permits to deliver the foods because you couldn't drive in the streets because there was military. Oh, it was hectic. Yeah. So, but not one staff member got laid off at ZipZap. I mean, we kept everybody on salary. We worked with small
reductions
in salaries, and some of them no reductions at all on the lower tiers. And then we've managed to pull through. And last week, the president reduced our country to level one, which is the lowest level. So hopefully it'll kickstart our economy a little bit. But
we still have all the protocols in place, you know, the mask and the social distancing and
hand washing.
The numbers in a venue, you can't have more than 250 people. You can't, you know, that kind of rules. But we're starting our programs now.
But we're starting our program slowly.
So we
started with the Dare to Dream first, because there's only 15 of them, which is the young adult training program, the vocational training. Then a month ago, we started our Zappers program, which is our advanced performers. Next weekend, we start our Seminar program, which is our intermediate performers, and so on and so forth. And then some of the programs like beginners and one of the outreach programs, two outreach programs, which we've been doing in partnership with Doctors Without Borders for 16 years, which is working with children living with HIV. At the clinics in the townships. We can't do that until next year.
We can't.
Because nobody can go into the clinics because of COVID. And so, you know, we are slow. At least we're up and running with some of our programs, that's been really exciting to see our venues full of kids again. But the shows, our first shows are only going to be in December to 50% capacity of our dome.
We don't have a relapse.
Yeah, no, we won't. We'll be fine. So we haven't done any performances since February. And we normally do about 100 shows a year.
Out of curiosity, what is the kind of the regular, not in this year, but previous to this, the calendar year for ZipZap? So are most of your programs like 12 months long or on a school calendar, or how does that kind of work?
So the calendar goes from January to December. So schools are going to start around the 15th of January. So we're going to start our programs a week or 2 weeks after that. Usually the youth programs a week after school and the outreach programs 2 weeks after school. And then we go until December. So we usually finish all our programs by the end of November. 1st of December is World AIDS Day. And then we do shows or we booked or we commissioned by a shopping center or by anybody. Or we
corporate functions or whatever, yeah.
So four terms. The setup of ZipZap is a pyramid. So we have all the grassroots outreach programs at the bottom. That's maybe 1,200, 1,500 kids in five different programs. So Ubuntu, the program in the clinic in Khayelitsha, it's for kids living with HIV. So that's 250 kids. And then ECD, early childhood development, it's with creches, to 4 to 6 year olds. So that's around 400 kids. And then second chance, it's with the Western Cape Education Department, where we bus kids from very disadvantaged, underserved areas that the department is choosing to bring the kids to us for an outing and experience.
During school hours.
During school hours, yeah.
So it's like a two-hour workshop. Yeah.
That's 600 kids. And then we've got Jump Street. That's a program with SOS Children Village. So they came to us to say we've got a big problem with our kids because we have them until they're 18 because it's a government institution. And then once they're 18, they go back into the same condition, environment.
Can I just interrupt here? Those are some of the toughest kids to work with because they're kids who've been taken away by the state from their families.
That's
because of violence, drug abuse, rape, whatever. And they live in a children's home. And they're very, very,
they're just
traumatized. They're very traumatized in certain ways.
Trauma.
But this program has been one of our most successful programs with SOS. And because the counselors from SOS have said they've tried karate, surfing, skateboard, they've tried lots of things. And the circus program after 3 years has been the one that the kids always will look forward to getting up and going to. So we're very... Yeah, we're very proud of SOS. It's a really cool, and then, it's called Jump Street.
And then we've got a program called The Hood because we just got a new academy built in the neighborhood.
My old neighborhood where I grew up.
Salt River, and then the kids, it's a poor neighborhood, and the kids are still roaming in the streets. So when the building was going up and the kids were climbing on the frames and on the bricks and everything, it's okay, we're going to do a program for them. So those are the base program. Those are the outreach. And then those are targeted groups. And then after that, we've got youth programs. So youth programs, we say we're running a program for 7 to 12-year-old on a Saturday morning, anybody who comes. So that's when you start mixing the kid because the parents who see a show, hear about that, they bring the kid. But then we filter the kids from the outreach program
into that.
Join that also beginners group with the age range. And say, well, instead of coming with your school, if you want, once a week. So if you want to come, then we'll provide transport. Make sure they're not, you know, there's no discrimination in that way. They don't have parents to drive. So
also, the school is free, so nobody pays.
Yeah. So then after
that. Doesn't rich or poor. It's when you walk in the doors, you're all the same.
So after that, you once a week program. I say, well, if you want to come more, you go to the next program, then it's twice a week. And then you have to be able to juggle three balls 10 times, and you have to be able to climb the rope 6 times, and you have to be not miss a class more than 3 times, you know, and then they can go up. And then we have a performing talent scouting program, almost on the top of the pyramid, where the show coordinator looks at all the show and tell of each program at the end of each year. And I say, oh, I see talent here, 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 and there. So they can take a big boy, a small girl, or whatever, you know, doesn't matter. And then those one are 3 times a week, 3 to 4 hours. And also they get transported, but they get picked up from the school straight to Zip Zap back home.
And
so
home.
Now we've got two drivers that they go like, and we get the petrol sponsored. So that really, really helps. But it was really a conscious decision to say, if we want performers of colors, if we want diversity, we need to provide what they don't have. What is it that they don't have? They don't have access. You know, our school is in a, you know, factory industrial area, which is neighborhood out of Cape Town, and the kids, you know, yeah. 50 kilometers away.
The thing is that as Zip Zap's growing, the reality is as the classes get too big for one group, then we decide, okay, well, how can we make this group smaller? So we're listening to Zappa's program. The more advanced goes over. And so it's like I said, it's a very organic process, Zip Zap. We find a way to make it work. That's the bottom line. You know, we don't say, no, we can't. We say, how can we make it work just differently?
So and, you have and, to provide. So, for example, the training, the vocational training program, it's 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So
was six, no.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you learning, and then Friday and Saturday, you touch teaching the others. So the one who wants they to come every day, it's complicated. So they said, well, we need a place to stay. So we created a residence. We built a residence. I said, okay, you want a place to stay? We're going to provide accommodation, Wi-Fi and laundry and everything. So yeah, in the building, we built a res so they can stay there. So the girl who was in Worcester, she was,
Worcester makes no sense.
She was living 120 kilometers away, come to training. She would wake up at 4 a.m, yeah, take the train at 4:45 to be able to be at 8 o'clock in for the training started at
on
9.
Saturday morning. Yeah.
So she wanted to join the full-time program and say, okay, well, we'll find accommodation for you.
And the weirdest thing is that she didn't really, she was just so passionate, but she didn't really have any skill. Like she, you know, she struggles a bit. She wants to be an aerialist or, you know, and, but because she was so determined and dedicated to get to them ZipZap, we had to make a plan for her. Mm-hmm. And it actually turns out she's really, really a very good technician. She's like really, she's learning to program lighting, you know? And so it was just because that she wanted to be there. We gave her the opportunity to be there knowing, you know, a professional trapeze artist. I'm not so sure, but she found her place. You know, it was amazing.
I'm wondering, you mentioned earlier with the SOS program that unlike skateboarding or surfing or other things, somehow circus fit this hole. I'm wondering if you can speak to what you think circus specifically or uniquely can teach children or people or offer them.
That's an easy answer. It's called circus magic.
No, it's the show. It's the show.
Yeah, it's the appreciation of the, it's these kids are abandoned, you know, like not appreciated. They you know, they have a really tough time, and when they get to, you know, show their talent and people are clapping for them and appreciating them and they feel like they're wanted and loved, it's I think it's like good medicine for these children, you know. I mean, psychologically they've been battered, you know. They don't feel like they cared for. They've been taken away by the state because of their conditions, and then all of a sudden they, you know, they're in a nurturing environment where they're getting hugged, you know, hugs from their teachers, or you know, told that they're good. And you know, it's even in the beginning when they first started, it was really tough because their attention span and their anger management was tough, but
for me it's the show. They build, they have to work together for an outcome that's actually really positive, that's fun, and that increase the self-esteem. So like Brent say, they've been abused and the only thing they know is to abuse others. They don't really have any other tools. So when they build a show, they learn to
work together,
to put somebody else on their shoulders or to climb on somebody's shoulders. They realize that when they work together, can really have a nice and positive outcome. So for all our programs are based on shows. The beginners, the one who don't know how to do nothing, we still do a show. This is the highlight of the year. It's the show. And this is the basic to get somewhere, is to have you work towards the same goal. And it's a happy, constructive,
fun,
positive, fun goal. So that's really the way we do all our programs. They all have to do shows.
And it's not, it's the process needs to be fun on the way to that show.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we believe in that at ZipZap, it should be a fun, safe place for kids.
So the show, you know,
so there's not pressure. We don't put any pressure on them to produce the best handstand or juggling act.
No.
We make it important that it must be the best they can do, but there's no expectation on their level.
And the process, they all have the choice. They have the choice of the music and they have the choice of creativity. And if they have an idea for somebody else, we do it. We listen. So they have a voice and we listen to their voice and then they see it happening on stage. And then when they're older, so Inati, for example, now she's designing lighting. So she's busy lighting the show for the other kids. And it's great. She feels great. If she can't perform or if somebody is injured, they still do. They have another place in the show. They all have a spot.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What, growing up in theater, I always felt like, and then seeing circus and kind of like how I would say empowering it is for little kids versus when I was doing theater camps as a kid, it always felt so much pressure and, you know, you never really felt good enough. But circus, I feel like you have such autonomy of yourself to show that you can achieve something and confidence and like, I can juggle three balls, you know, like I can work hard and I can see this really paying off. And it's such a huge difference to me than like theater where it's like, you can sing, but I don't think you're as good as this kid, you know? And like, you don't get to really pick like what you want to do.
That's where I think circus magic really is there, is because there's a, if you're not a trapeze artist, you can be a juggler. If you're not a juggler, you can be a wire walker, a unicyclist. There's a place for every kid, short, tall, fat, thin, in the circus world. And, you know, and I think that's what's different to horse riding or gymnastics, because if you go to you got to do gymnastics and that's it. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, you'll find your space if you look hard enough.
Yeah,
and that's where the circus magic comes into it.
And we put on stage kids that just throwing one ball,
right? You know, but you can still throw one ball. You know, it's like I got this one ball.
Yeah, no, but it's how you throw one ball.
Yeah.
It's how you throw that ball. Because if you've got style and you've got a nice costume and makeup and you're good at that, that's good enough.
Yeah, you got some good lighting?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got lighting. We've got it all. We've got a lighting rig. We've got a stage. The thing is, obviously, as they progress into the zip-zap way of life, if they go that route, when they start getting into the Simunier and the Zappers programs, then the expectations start changing. Because then they're getting into the elite performance group and then everything becomes a little bit more serious because the training is harder, the expectations are there because we, you know, then you're starting to sell tickets and you have in the public and you, you know, but by the time they get to that group, they know what they want to do within the zip-zap bubble, not as a career, but, you know, because then they're friends and they're all pushing the limits and they, you know, they want to. And it, you'll see our shows technically are not the best shows in the world. They don't stand on one hand for 5 minutes, but the way they perform is a different story.
Now, you guys have two kids. I know Sabine because I've seen her in Passage and I thought her silk sack was so beautiful. But I don't know your other child. Are they in the circus as well?
Are they where? I mean, she's still.
Well. Okay, so Sabine chose the circus route, which was, you know, great. And Saskia is very good academically, and she's chosen to become a human rights lawyer.
Wow.
So she got into a university outside of Paris, which is ranked the number three in the world for politics. It's called Sciences Po. And she's just come, well, proud dad will tell you, she's just come first in a law class.
Wow, good for her.
And 17 and a half out of 20. Yeah, so she's just, because of COVID, the university closed down, so she's had to come home. So what does she do? She jumps straight back into the circus. So she's now busy training some other kids, and also she's doing an act with two girls because the third one's injured. So for the shows coming up, she's going to take care of back in the performance. But theoretically, she's online with her third year. Yeah. And she shouldn't go back to university, we hope, if COVID calms down in January next year.
Yeah, maybe if, you know, prior to this interview, I would have been, wow, that's kind of a departure from circus. But now talking to you both, I mean, you guys both have very humanitarian missions at heart. So it does seem to, you know, fit genetically, at least.
They didn't have to run away with the circus. They were born
exactly.
In it.
Exactly.
And a lucky girl.
It's a blessing and a curse, I think, you know, depending. I did want to ask, we recently interviewed Ryan and Don, who you guys know, And I do know that other people have gone over to ZipZap from America or from Canada to coach for a short window of time. We have a lot of American people in particular who listen to this podcast. I'm wondering if you could talk about that sort of cross-cultural programming or coaching you guys do, in case there's somebody who's listening who's like, oh my God, I would love to be involved some way.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant experience. If you are a performer and you're looking at recycling into choreographing or into teaching, you know, it's a space where it's very free, and then the kids are very keen, and we're far away from everything, so we don't have that interaction that you have when you're in the States and you all know each other and all visit the circus schools and the show. It doesn't happen here. We're far away, completely isolated.
So it's great to have interns.
Yeah, it's great to have people that are keen to share, but are keen also to experiment and, you know, to try new things. We're keen on everything. And Cape Town is a great city, touristic, young. There's a lot of nature, you know, between the mountain and the beach. And we've got a res. So it's quite easy because we offer accommodation and all is included.
And meals, and
food, the Wi-Fi, laundry. It's all there. So, for circus, it's great to at least stay a month to just try to have a bit of an impact on the youth. Some stay longer. Young people from Germany on the exchange program, they stay for a year, but they're young, so they're not that qualified. So, for example, we had Nicola Pulka, so he was finishing his show in Australia and he was going to South America, so he stayed with us in between. He's highly qualified in straps.
I think he graduated from ENC, with Sabine graduated in Montreal.
So sometimes we have great technicians for one discipline. Sometimes we have young people that just help in our outreach programs, and sometimes we have people that just help us take good pictures or make costume. We had a German girl who came, who was amazing with makeup, and she just did makeup classes and did creative makeup for shows. So anything, we welcome anyone with a skill or actually the willingness to share. That's enough for us.
I think before Corona, we had about 30 interns from all over the world a year.
Wow.
And I think our biggest year was maybe 40. Did we even reach 40 a year?
Not foreign. We've got volunteers that help even local people. Foreigners, between 20 and 30 throughout the year. Now we're trying to have the people stay longer to have a bigger impact. So when they come, they observe for a week, and then we decide on the project, because it's more interesting for the person coming to say, what are you going to focus on? Do you want to improve the flexibility of everybody, or do you want to create one act, or, you know, what is it that you want to do? So we try to decide on the project together, and then it's more interesting, I think, for both sides.
Yeah. But we do have, obviously, we have communications before people come. So that there's a process to follow, because, I mean, we don't want people to have expectations that we don't deliver and vice versa. Mm. You know, so there is a bit of a process, but we don't have many complaints about people coming to Cape Town, I promise you.
I know, I'm thinking, like, what can I offer to come to Cape Town? What can we provide?
Do you guys have any dreams for ZipZap in the next 5, 10, 15 years, things you would really like to see happen with your company?
Yeah, I want to change the South African policy and add circus as an art form in the country. That's really something I'm aiming for. I would like to have satellites all over the country of, 500 circus schools in the country would be great.
That ain't going to happen in our lifetime. I'm not running one.
I'd like to have a professional company. I really would like our performers to have the chance to tell their stories to the world.
I think the 3 to 5 year plan, just to answer your question, is that We are working on creating a professional touring show at the moment. We're in rehearsals with it. And hopefully we're going to launch it towards the end of next year. And Assault on Europe would be nice. When they graduate Dead to Dream, they actually have a show, a zip-zap show they can work on or be part, you know. And I think our tent, we've got a big, it's not a tent, it's a dome structure. It's 60 meters by 21 meters wide. It's big, but it's all our shows and our corporate functions are in there. And it has a lifespan. And also the ground that we're on is going to be developed. So to cut a long story short, what's big on the plans at the moment is just like we've built a ZipZap Academy for training, we want to build not a dome or a tent structure. We want to build a solid structure where ZipZap can generate that 45% income in a building, not in a tent. So we want to create a mini theaters, a mini circus building that will be there for years to come. As a show income show generator, show
circus,
venue. Yeah.
Circus venue, circus performance venue.
Oh, yeah. So awesome.
And then, yeah, the performance company is also because every time I would like to raise the level of circus in South Africa. And every time we've got somebody, you know, good, they go overseas to find work or to pursue their career. So I think it's great, and it's great to travel and then come back at a later stage. But some of the kids from the township, they don't travel, they can't travel. Where do they start? And they don't have metric, they don't have a high school certificate, so they can't join the National Circus School. So far, all the students, and our daughter included, went to National Circus School because they had the high school
diploma. Yeah.
So we're trying to create a program where you can get to a higher level and employment in your country. And
without the diploma.
Yeah.
So actually, we're just trying to solve whatever challenges are brought to us. So every year we meet with everybody and we say, okay, what's working, what's not working, what is needed, what do you think the kids need? And then we create, you know,
and then as usual, we go for it.
Yeah,
we just go for it. Blind.
I think it's very circusy attitude, you know. He's gotta do it. He's gotta try.
Go for it. It's a flying trapeze phrase.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, it's been like so amazing talking to you both and learning about ZipZap for the last hour. We do ask all of our guests the exact same three questions at the end of the podcast that I'd love to get you guys to answer. And you can answer together or you can give separate answers. And the first question you answered a little bit as it relates to maybe couples, but I'll open it up a little bit more. Has there been a piece of advice, either really, really good or really, really bad, that somebody has given you that has stuck with you?
Oh, the best advice I got is imagine, believe, and persevere. For me, it's been not only in circus, in business, in everything. You imagine whatever you want, you first have to imagine it. So you have to make the time to say, like, the question you ask, what is your dream in the next 5-10 years? Well, actually, we're going for a 3-day retreat in 3 weeks' time to actually, what is it that we want to imagine? And we have to take the time to do that because sometimes we're just in the grind and survival and everything. Stop and let's just imagine. Let's just dream. And then once we decide on the dream, because we're going to be 10 people, so hopefully there's going to be lots of dream, then we have to choose a few and we have to go for it. We have to believe. To believe that we're going to make it. And to persevere, because we're not going to stop until it's done and we don't give up. And if people say no today, I say, it's fine. When can I ask you again? I'll ask you again next year. And we continue. So for me, those three advice. Words yeah. are very good advice. One of our board members. Yeah. That's for me is a good one.
That's great.
What is yours?
Oh, do we both have to answer the same question?
You can do it together or you can do it separate. Maybe a really bad one sticks out.
I was trying to think of a really bad one. I suppose the worst advice I was given was Sure. I don't know. I suppose when that guy told me to test the rigging and he forgot to tighten the Crosby clamp.
Yes, that I do like, though, how you found a way to turn that into a positive, you know. So
yeah, well, I almost broke my back. It was close, but like I said, it was a good accident. I met Laurence.
Perfect. So,
and I learned to always check your own rigging.
There you go. That's another piece of advice. Yes. That's a good one.
I feel like the ENC kids always have that drilled into their heads too. And I was like, I got to check my own rigging. I'm like, great. It's awesome.
Yeah, you have to. Very important.
So second question, for somebody who is a student and discovering circus, is there a book or a movie or a TV show or a painting, any kind of thing that has really inspired you that you would recommend artistically somebody try to experience?
Sure. Well, I really like Buster Keaton.
That's who Josh was for Halloween.
A lot of our comedy at Zip Zap is pretty much slapstick, not traditional clowning. We don't do that. But I love Keaton and Harold Lloyd, and that for me, I like the old. I like watching and showing the kids circus history. I get inspired by watching the 30s, the 40s, 50s, you know, the greats, the Concalianos, the Alfredo Cardoza, and you know, all the sort of and we do. So we do a lot of research into the old timers, you know, before my time, but people that I looked up to as a kid. And so I think, I get inspired by artists of the past.
Laurence, anything from
you? Yeah, I guess it's different. Yeah, I think it's different because of our environment is more social circus. So we don't have much time to do the artistic creation and research and do that. So, and we're also trying to focus on joy. So everything that we do with the kids, because they've been through so much trauma, we want all our shows, everything is about to be happy and to have fun and to just leave your worries away, you know, leave your worries behind and join us, you know, in something fun and happy. So very light-hearted stuff.
That inspires you.
We just want to try to find something happy, whatever at the time. Whatever it is at the time. That's going to make us happy.
That works. You know, something that brings out that feeling. I think particularly with kids, it's so amazing seeing kids express joy. It's on a different level than, you know, adults who've lived lives and had things, a little bit more life experience.
I mean, yeah. I mean, last year, 2 years ago, what, The Greatest Showman? I mean, everybody was so inspired at that movie. It was a dream and everybody was singing the song and all that. And then we used it in the show because everybody could relate and be happy and it made everybody happy. That's how it works because we had that level with the kids.
Yeah, that movie I think was inspirational for a lot of people. We went to an Orthodox Jewish wedding where they played a song from that as they walked down the aisle in Hebrew. So.
And a little boy was singing it. It's like, okay. There's a lot happening.
Yeah.
And to our final question, who do you think we should have on the podcast?
Who do you want to interview?
Yeah.
Next to
that.
And it can be kind of anyone in the realm of the arts.
Or circus.
Circus art.
Yeah.
Rodley Stevens jumps to mind because he loves to speak. But somebody that would be,
So you're not following a theme.
So
it's not like
essentially we interview mostly people who founded circus companies, but also circus artists. We've interviewed lighting designers. We've interviewed rigging people,
tent bosses.
Hmm. That's a good question. Because there's so many people, I'm just trying to think of the right one.
I would love to hear from, specific lighting designer, people that compose music or, no?
I'm racking my brain. It's funny because it's...
You see, I was president of the jury at the Cirque du Demain three, four years ago. And they asked, say, who do you want to give us the president of the jury prize, you know? And all those artists are getting all those prizes. And I gave the prize to the lighting designer because it just made the show...
it was amazing.
Absolutely amazing with the colors and the feelings. And I think sometimes the technicians are not always
recognized.
Rewarded.
Have you spoken to Jessica Eintel from
Jessica's great. St. Louis? We've got Jessica on here before. But that's she's amazing.
We were thinking maybe we should talk to her again now. We interviewed her almost four years ago.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. I'm trying to think of social circus directors that are there. You know, when Zip Zap started, there were only 10 social circus schools in the world. And now I believe there's like 675 countries.
Wow. So you've got, there's also in the social circus world.
That's what I was thinking.
You've got in Brussels, you've got Vincent Waters. He's also in Caravan, but doing a training of trainers as well, but he's got a school for handicapped.
Oh, okay.
So he's doing circus.
Handicapped people, from Down syndrome to wheelchairs to
what they achieve is unbelievable. Really, really amazing. You've got, of course, the big, you've got Junior in Brazil, you've got Felicity in Colombia, all those circus. But
I think if to take a really interesting spin on social circus, Vincent's programs. Yeah. I went to visit the school.
It's amazing.
It's incredible. It's really.
It's
not a lot of people.
It's in Brussels, you said?
Not a lot. Yeah. Brussels, yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
What's it called?
L'école de Sept de Vos.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you get his contact through Caravan. If you know the network, Caravan. Yeah. Also amazing. And then you've got Sorin Circus in Finland.
But I'm going to try to get the Brussels person you recommended. That's great. We've never spoken to anybody who's doing that kind of sort of handicap accessible circus. That's pretty unusual.
There was a hand-to-hand act this year in Big Apple. That was one guy was in a wheelchair and he was the flyer. And it was really cool. It was the first time I've seen it, so. That'd be a great person to talk to.
Yeah.
You saw the girl with one leg. You worked with her in Washington.
Yeah. Roya the Destroyer.
I'll follow her on Instagram. She's amazing. She's like a breakdancer, handstand artist.
We were invited to perform at the White House when Barack was still president. We wouldn't be invited this year, but and then we did a collaboration with Jessica's student from Circus Harmony with Roya and Zip Zap Kids and Sabine, my daughter from Montreal. And we put a show together. We performed at the Kennedy Center and at the White House. Roya was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing to work with.
And I recommend anyone listening the kids follow her on Instagram. She's got some crazy tricks. And...
She's listening. Hi, Roya.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Roya. Well, Laurence and Brent, thank you guys for taking so much time to talk to us. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you both. I hope Lindsay and I get the chance to come to Cape Town in the near future and meet you guys in person and see all the stuff you're doing.
Yes, we'll bring our kid and you can teach him to balance.
Congratulations, guys.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. Awesome. Thanks for taking so much time.
And that was our interview with Laurence and Brent from Zip Zap Circus.
If you like our podcast, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, tweet us, email us at hello@howdowecircus.com, and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Have a good rest of the week. Happy hump day.
Catch you on the next one.
Our podcast is also available on Circus Talk, the international circus community's online resource and employment tool. If you are not a member yet, register and find your spotlight with Circus Talk today.